everyone, and welcome to Minute 43 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me on this lovely Wednesday at the end of April is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham Movie A Day and host of the Lambcast. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Hey, Rob. Nice to talk to you. And, of course, to all of the fans of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Minute by Minute.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much. Hopefully they'll all want to buy some very exotic earrings that we'll talk about during the course of today.
So if you're a good enough salesman, you can sell anything.
I'm not as good a salesman as Dell, that's for sure. Minute 43 begins with Dell saying 60 minutes and ends with Neil hanging up the phone. So yesterday's minute ended with the two of them getting to the St. Louis bus station, and we see Dell starting to sell some of his earrings. He continues
calling them earrings anyway.
Right, exactly. They're really shower rings, but yeah, that's true. So he ended yesterday's minute by saying, "Do you ever watch 60 Minutes?" And then he actually is able to start selling what he is trying to sell people. At this point, you get a montage of Dell selling to different groups of people. You know, he's holding up the shower curtain rings and mentions to one of them, "This is Czechoslovakian ivory." And that's it. It's $5. Great. "This is your Walter Cronkite moon ring." "Thank you. They're filled with helium, so they're very light." "Thank you. This is an autographed Daryl Strawberry earring." "All right." And each time we see that the different people that he's selling them to, you get to see these women that are just forking over cash to him. You know, they all look pretty funny putting those earrings on because they're shower curtain rings. But still works. And then he goes, "These are very special earrings, by the way. These were originally handcrafted for the Grand Wizard of China back in the 4th century. Now, these, of course, aren't the originals, but they're replicas. Very good replicas, too. They're selling for $5 a pair, 2 for $7. So this whole montage is great. I mean, it really shows us, again, who Dell is. You know, he's a lovable guy, and he's really good at his job. He's able to sell anything. I mean, come on. He takes shower curtain rings and passes them off as earrings, and it works. He's able to do that. Now, some of the things that he mentioned were pretty interesting. So first of all, you know, we mentioned yesterday, we touched upon it, that, you know, we were talking about Diane Sawyer with 60 Minutes. So 60 Minutes, do you know when 60 Minutes debuted, Richard?
I think it was 1968.
Wow. Richard, that's great. Very good.
Yeah, you're correct. It's been on a long time.
Right. It was created by Don Hewitt and Bill Leonard in 1968. And it stood apart from other news programs at the time because it had a unique style of reporter-centered investigation, which wasn't done up until then. In 2002, it was ranked as the number six on TV Guide's list of the 50 greatest TV shows of all time. In 2013, it was ranked number 24 on TV Guide's list of the 60 best series of all times. And apparently the New York Times called it one of the most esteemed news magazines on American television. So they had this unique setup. They're very much known for the fact that they have this stopwatch that is clicking along throughout the course of the show. You have it at the beginning where you see it on the zero mark, and then through various intervals throughout the show, you see it at the 15-minute mark and the 30-minute mark and the 60-minute mark and things like that. Right? The show began in 1972. It aired every Sunday from 6 to 7 Eastern time, but because of a lot of NFL games on Sundays, it was pushed off during the football season. So they actually changed it and they shifted it to starting at 7 o'clock. And if there was a game, then they automatically said that it would start at 7:30. Okay. It actually copied a format that was originally used by a Canadian program known as W5, which premiered 2 years earlier, but it actually was able to pioneer many of the most important investigative journalism procedures and techniques, which they used for, you know, re-editing interviews, hidden cameras, and gotcha journalism, where they would visit different people's homes or offices, as they're investigating them and stuff like that. Obviously, since then, so many shows have copied this format all around the globe. Then he mentions Czechoslovakian ivory. I looked that up, and I couldn't find that there really is anything known as Czechoslovakian ivory.
No.
He was just saying it, and apparently it worked. What can I tell you? And then he mentions Walter Cronkite. Okay, so I know you know who Walter Cronkite is, Richard.
Yeah,
So Walter
Walter
Cronkite,
Cronkite was the most trusted man in America.
that is correct. For 19 years. So Cronkite was born in 1916. He passed away in 2009. He was the anchorman of the CBS Evening News for 19 years, from 1962 to 1981. And as you mentioned, he was the most trusted man in America, because they had an opinion poll that that's what the results that they came from that. He was a reporter from the 1930s all the way through the 80s, and he reported on World War II, on the Nuremberg trials, on the combat in Vietnam, on Watergate, the Iran hostage crisis, the assassinations of JFK, Martin Luther King, when Lenin was murdered also. And he was actually also a fan of the US space program, and he did exclusive and extensive coverage of the Mercury project, of all the moon landings, and even the space shuttle. I still remember that in, I believe it was in the 1990s, after he had already retired, on CNN, they had someone who was doing all the space-related stuff. And I think it was when John Glenn went back up on the space shuttle in the 90s, where this other reporter was supposed to do all of the reporting. And this reporter was killed in a car crash, and they brought Cronkite in to replace him, to be there for, to because he has so much knowledge already about NASA and the space program and stuff like that. So in 1962, he succeeded Douglas Edwards as the anchorman of the CBS nightly feature newscast, which they renamed Walter Cronkite with the News. And eventually in 1963, they changed it to the CBS Evening News. And the show started off as a 15-minute news report, and then it quickly expanded to 30 minutes, which made Cronkite the first American anchor, or the first anchor of an American network who had a half-hour news program. Up until then, there weren't any half-hour news programs, and he became an icon in television news through all of his work. In 1980, he announced that he was going to retire, because CBS had a policy of mandatory retirement at age 65, which a lot of people were not happy about at the time, that he was being forced out. And he was known as a father figure or an uncle figure to everyone, and the audience would refer to him as a comfortable old shoe. Something that you wanted to be around, something that you felt comfortable in. And he retired on March 6, 1981, and was replaced by Dan Rather. Adele also mentions helium. That these particular earrings, or shower rings, are made of helium. So I'm not going to go into the whole scientific aspects of helium, because I can read stuff off, but I wouldn't understand it, so it doesn't really make a difference. It is a chemical element, and the symbol is HE, and the atomic number is 2. That's pretty much as scientific as I'm going to get. What I wanted to talk about is the different uses for it. I mean, most of us, when you think of helium, what's the first thing you think of, Richard?
Oh, balloons, of course.
Balloons. Exactly. That's the thing that everyone thinks of, is balloons. But it was used for rocket fuel, and it was used for different airships and balloons. Not just regular balloons that you get when it's your birthday, but hot air balloons, and it was used for jet zeppelins. And it is also, I found it very interesting that it's used as a breathing gas for, people that are diving, because when you mix helium together with a few other things, it says Trimix, Heliox, and Hella Air, it reduces the effects of narcosis when you reach very large, very deep depths, while you're not depths, hopefully not depth,
Hopefully
deep,
not, no.
yeah, deep depths of that. So that's pretty much all I know about helium. Not much else. Then the next thing they mention is Daryl Strawberry. So what do you? I know you're from the West Coast, so
Well,
you probably don't know that much about him. But what do you know about Daryl Strawberry?
my memory of Strawberry was that he was a terrific baseball player who had big drug problems and was one of the celebrities that got caught and suffered but came back from it. And then I couldn't tell you, I think he's passed, hasn't he?
No, he's still alive. He was born in
Oh, he's still alive?
1962.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he was born in 1962. He's still alive. He is a former baseball player. He played for 17 seasons in the major leagues. He was, at the beginning, one of the most feared sluggers in the sport until he had a drug problem, and that caused a lot of other problems. During his career, he was on the New York Mets when they won the World Series, and he was on the Yankees for three of their World Series championships in 96, 98, and 99. But he was also suspended three times by Major League Baseball for substance abuse. And he was voted to the All-Star game eight straight times between 1984 and 1991. He is one of only five Major League Baseball players to hit two pinch-hit grand slams in the same season. He is only one of three players in history, along with Ricky Lede and Jose Vizcaino, to have played on all four of the former and current New York-based MLB teams, the Mets, Yankees, Dodgers, and Giants. So you might have known him from the Dodgers, when.
Yeah, no, I think he was, like I said, I don't think he was with the Dodgers more than a couple of seasons.
Right. Yeah, he
But
was.
he did play. And I didn't follow baseball very closely in those days. I followed it when I was a kid, and I stopped following it. So I mean, but I knew he's a famous athlete, so you heard about him, and of course all of the troubles made it easy to hear about him as well. And his notoriety and fame would be one of those selling points. Oh yeah, Daryl Strawberry signature earring. By the way, where's the signature on that earring?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. And again, this is 1987, so he had just won the World Series the year before with the Mets. That was the time that he was very famous.
Right.
When he was mostly famous in 84, 85, 86, 87, the very beginning of his career before he started having all the substance abuse issues. So yeah, that makes sense. At this point, then he mentions the Grand Wizard of China. What do you know about that?
I tried to look up the Grand Wizard of China, and all I kept getting were references to the Klan.
Yeah, I don't think they have the Klan in China, but
No.
the truth is that it is not real. It's completely made up. So, see, that's one of the problems with made up things in movies like this is that when you do search on the internet for them, what do you find? References to planes, trains, and automobiles. That's all I find.
Yeah.
So it
That's
makes
pretty
things.
much it.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, there is no Grand Wizard of China. So at this point, then we see Neil sitting on a bench. And it looks like he's trying to fix his hat or something like that. And you see the dilapidated area around him. You see all these like newspapers strewn on the floor, and you see the way people look around him. I mean, he's not in high society anymore. But what I loved is you see in the background, you see two large video games. You see arcade game style,
Galaga was one of
games.
them, wasn't it?
That's right. You see Galaga and Centipede. So I found that interesting. I wouldn't think that that's what you would find in a bus station, but I guess so. And you have like this woman who's playing on it that looks like she's doing really well.
Well,
And
they were popular,
yeah, that's true. She has like a guitar next to her. She has like a guitar leaning on the Galaga, and she's playing Galaga. So, what can I tell you? But then, if you look at the luggage around Neil, it's pretty funny because that's not his luggage. Because you have a brown suitcase and a black sports bag, which is not what they have. So I don't know whose luggage that is. These days, if you wouldn't, people would get too scared if you see luggage just lying around with nobody around them. Back in
Yeah, I mean, that's
87, it wasn't as much of an issue.
different times, different times.
Completely, completely. And so then Neil stands up and he puts it, he like folds his jacket up and puts it on the seat, which you'd think he would be pretty scared to do that because you don't know what is crawling on those seats. Again, they don't look very, very sanitary. Let's put it that
I
way.
think that's why he put the jacket on the seat so
Because
he
then he
could
puts his
sit on
hat,
it.
no, then he puts his hat on the seat, on the jacket, right? And then he moves towards the payphones. And then you see him like pick up the receiver with two fingers. It's very funny. Like he doesn't know what type of diseases he's going to get by actually touching this phone.
Did you know, I know you've seen thousands of movies. Do you remember the movie Tattoo with Bruce Dern?
I've never seen that movie, actually.
All right. One of the jobs he has, the job's got nothing to do with the story, but he sanitizes public phones.
That makes sense.
And so when I see the shot of Steve Martin, kind of holding up the phone with his handkerchief and pinching it, trying to keep it away from him, I always think of, somebody's got to go around and clean those phones up so that they aren't disgusting for everybody to use.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense. Because it does look pretty disgusting. You'd think that he would try and find something to maybe a tissue or even just use his jacket to hold onto it. You'd think that he would have thought a little ahead to have something to cover his hand. Obviously this is pre-COVID world, so people
Well,
don't
he
know.
left his gloves in the office.
Yes, that's true. Gloves he
But
doesn't have,
that was an earlier minute.
because he doesn't need them. He's
That's
gonna
it.
get in the cab and get on the plane and be home in Chicago just in just a few short hours. And here we are, almost 20.
Hindsight.
It's almost 24 hours after that, and we're still moving along. And he has this like Steve Martin is a great actor because he has this like disgusted look on his face as he's picking up the receiver with his hands like that. And then we see that he begins to dial and he uses his knuckles to dial. So like what's the difference between your knuckle and your and your finger itself when you're gonna be
The tip of your
dialing?
finger. Well, I don't know about
No,
you, Rob, but
from cooties, that's what I'm talking about. He's worried about
yeah,
getting cooties
but
here.
I was going to say, in the COVID era, there were plenty of times when you didn't want to touch something with the point of your finger, and I found myself doing the exact same kind of thing, punching buttons like on the elevator
You do that
with
with your
my
elbows.
knuckle in.
We do that with our elbows.
There you go. Well, that would probably work better, but
Not on a payphone.
Because you're less
No.
likely to rub your eyes or your face with your knuckle and more likely to do it with the tip of your finger.
That's true.
You're scratching your
Okay.
face with the
You are
finger and the
you.
fingernail. You're not really rubbing your face with the knuckle on your face.
That's true. That's very true. All right, you got me on that. And this is something that we're all still dealing with these days. So you're right. Or not as much. I think people are less strict at this point, I guess. With those type of things, because we all know that we know nothing. Before, everyone thought they knew, but now everyone knows the truth that nobody knows nothing about what's going on and what's going to cause problems and what's not. And then he holds the phone like a very clear distance away from his face as he's trying to make this call. And then the shot changes and we see a whole group of kids singing in a Thanksgiving pageant at school. Reminding everyone this is Wednesday, so we're talking about November 25th. It's the day before Thanksgiving, so the kids are still in school. Because when I was watching it, I said to myself, "Wait a second, Thanksgiving there is no school, but it's the day before, so we're still a day ahead of Thanksgiving itself."
Rob, how long has it been since you lived in the US?
Since I lived in the U.S. full time, it's been 20. No, it's been 30 years, almost 30 years.
Because, when I was a kid, and you can see it in the movie, Thanksgiving was the holiday. Usually you got Friday off also,
Yeah.
but you still went to school Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
That's
In the
correct.
US nowadays, there are lots of school districts where they take the whole week off.
Because they don't want you to get stranded in Wichita.
That's probably it. They don't want you to get stuck in
Wichita.
Jefferson City.
Wow, okay, that I didn't know. So you have taught me something else, something new. Yes, as a kid, I remember, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, that Thanksgiving vacation was from Thursday till Monday. But apparently, wow, okay, that's, yeah, I guess they realized that the kids don't need to be in school as much.
I think the teachers worked it out. That's what that was going on.
That's probably true. That's probably true. So we get to see all these kids singing in this pageant, and they actually sing some very interesting lyrics. We get to hear them say, "Spring over the ground like a hunting hound, for this is Thanksgiving Day," which got me thinking. 2 days ago, we were talking about that there was a song that they were singing on the bus. And I think it was the same song because it said on Thanksgiving Day. That was what I heard at the end of that minute, and I wasn't able to figure out what song it was. But here, when I had the full verse, I was actually able to do a little bit of research and find out what it is. And I did find the song. Now, this song has 12 stanzas. There's no way I'm going to go along and say all the stanzas of
Thank
it.
you.
I don't want to do it either. So the stanza that they're referring to here, it's actually a song called "Going to Grandma's House" or something like that. And
Is this over the hills and through the woods?
yes, it is.
There you go.
So this stanza that the kids are singing is "Over the river and through the wood, trot fast, my dapper gray, spring over the ground like a hunting hound, for tis Thanksgiving Day." So yeah, this is "Over the rivers and through the woods." I didn't know that that was a Thanksgiving song. I actually probably, besides this movie, hearing those lines, I probably never even heard of it. And you knew the name of the song, so I guess that means you're familiar with the song.
Over the hills and through the woods to grandmother's house we go, and that's as much as I know.
The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the white and drifted snow.
Well, thank you. I'm
Yeah.
glad you've got all the lyrics there.
And actually, it's going to grandfather's house. It's not even grandmother's house. That's interesting. Yeah, but we're not going to go into that. That's just too much. And so then we hear Neil. He's still standing by the phone. We hear the phone ringing and ringing and ringing. You know, you'd think that they would have had some sort of answering machine. Even in the 80s, there were answering machines. Obviously, they're not home. The whole family is at this pageant, you know, watching Neil's daughter Marty sing "Over to Grandma's House." So he has this look of disappointment on his face. I guess he didn't look at his watch and remember that his daughter has a pageant at this particular hour. And it actually makes it seem as if, you know, he's just not home very much. You know, it's something that they really don't get into that much in this movie about, you know, whether he's constantly traveling or this is a special trip that he needed to make. There are different parts that allude to different aspects of it, you know, that maybe this is something that happens often, but then there are other parts in the script that make it sound as if this is a special trip that he's usually not away. So I don't know. What do you
Yeah,
think
well, I
about
think they're
that?
hinting at it quite a bit that he is spending a lot of time at work and not exactly neglecting his family, but missing out on some of those things. And it's causing him to, and at the holidays like this, of course, that's what people think about their family. And so here's when that thought is at the forefront of his brain, and he feels guilty. Let's face it, he feels guilty he's not going to be there for this family holiday, or he's afraid he's not going to be there for the
Right.
family
I mean,
holiday.
well, there is a whole aspect. There's a subplot in the original script, which is completely excised from this movie, is that he and his wife are in a big fight, and she keeps getting angry at him about the fact that he's never home, and she thinks he's having an affair, and that all of these stories that he's telling her about things that have happened to him in Dell, it's all just a lie, and that he's, you know, just completely lying about everything that's going on. So if you look at it from that perspective, I mean, there are certain parts where during their conversation, she says to him, "Well, maybe you shouldn't come home if that's what you know, if it's not important for you to be home with the family for Thanksgiving, then maybe we don't want you here," that type of thing. But they cut all that out and kept things on a happier note. But you can still see it here and there with some of the conversations that happen along the way. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. Do you have anything else you wanted to talk about in this minute?
No, nothing. You know, just the salesmanship that goes into this and the customer service that he provides. I do like the fact that he you make stuff up for most of the people, this,
Czechoslovakian ivory.
And, these are based on the Grand Wizard of China.
Yeah.
But the one that I think really is designed to show some salesmanship are the three young girls. And he says, makes you look like you're 18. And right. they just immediately hand the money to him.
Right. That's tomorrow, though.
That's good that's audience tomorrow. Analysis.
That's tomorrow, Richard.
Okay.
You jumped the gun on that one, but that's fine. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, no. It all flows together, obviously. That's right. You're 100% right about that. So every day I also talk about the differences between the original script and the finished film. So this minute actually just has one little change where he talks about the Grand Wizard of China. He says those earrings were made by hand for the Grand Wizard of China. That solid pastel ivory over a core of 14 karat gold and diamond chips. And then he continues and says, and not only do they look smashing, they prevent headaches, make your perfume hold its scent longer. So obviously that wasn't needed. There's a reason why they cut it out. But what's interesting is that none of the other references that he makes here are mentioned in the script, which makes me believe that John Candy ad-libbed all of those.
Improvising, I think.
They said just do improv here, pretend that you're selling and start making up things. And he mentions the Czechoslovakian ivory, Walter Cronkite, helium, Daryl Strawberry, all these things that are not mentioned. Diane Sawyer, you can go back to yesterday's minute.
Right.
So I think they do a nice job with that. And those are pretty much the slight difference in the script. So every Wednesday we do a special segment called Hughes Hump Day, where my guest gives their top five movies by John Hughes. So, Richard, what have you got for us? What are your top five?
Okay, well, my top five John Hughes movies would be number five, 16 Candles. I know that it's got a lot of stuff in it that is not politically correct nowadays. You've got characters that are racist stereotypes. There's a suggestion of date rape in it, but it's a lot more innocent than people would see it nowadays. I don't think it was malicious. It's a matter of perspective and timing, but I think that's a good film and terrific Molly Ringwald. She's really good in it. And Paul Dooley is in that movie as the father.
Can't go wrong with Paul Dooley.
I really like him as an actor. I've always enjoyed that. Number four is Home Alone. Which is, he wrote, he didn't direct the film, but it's very much, you can tell it's set in Chicago. It's that same house that I swear gets used in most of his films. And it's, everybody knows Home Alone. It's a great Christmas film. Very, very entertaining. Number three, the first time that I heard his name and knew who he was for National Lampoon's Vacation.
Okay.
And I swear he had been following our family around to come up with those stories, because we did road trips like that on a regular basis when I was a kid, and we stayed at some sketchy motels, had some weird incidents along the road, had car breakdowns, had weird station wagons like that. So I always identified with that, and I like that movie a lot.
I guess that's what happens with a magician father.
That's it. Number two is Christmas Vacation, because it takes the same concepts about kind of this square guy who wants to have a family relationship, and he's working so hard at it that it becomes more complex than it should. But I think my guess would be, if you ask most people to rank all of the vacation films, that Christmas Vacation would be at the top of the list in front of the original Vacation, because it stands out in the memory so well because of the holiday setting. And that's why it stands out for me. And then my favorite John Hughes film is The Breakfast Club, which is not particularly humorous. I mean, it has humorous moments in it but it's much more serious in nature. And, it's a character piece set in for the most part, a single setting. The characters are based on stereotypes, but they all have individual moments. And I showed that film a lot in my small group communication class to give people a sense of how group dynamics work, how people can dominate conversations, how people can change the relationship between one another in their interactions. And so I must have seen that film, you know, 40 times at one point or another.
Wow. All right, great. Thank you very much for that. So every day we do the segment Off the Beaten Track, where either myself or my guest give a little adventure or misadventure that happened to one of us during the course of life. So Richard, you have another one for us?
You know what? I was thinking about it. And when the term came up, when we're talking about helium, and then we're looking for the term Zeppelin, and you mentioned the Goodyear blimp. I actually rode on the Goodyear blimp when I was a kid.
Wow.
So that'll be my off the beaten path story for a moment. You mentioned my father was a professional magician. He had contacts in the entertainment world, including the television world. He had a friend who was a producer at KABC, which was a local television station. You know, it was the ABC affiliate. And he connected us several times with adventures. But one of those adventures was getting a chance to ride on the Goodyear blimp. And basically, we just went up in the blimp. It flew out of Culver City in the southern part of Los Angeles County. We went up in the air, flew to over downtown and back. I think we were on the blimp for maybe an hour at most. But it was interesting, and it's really loud. But I was probably 7 or 8 when that happened, so a long time ago.
Wow. All right. That's a great story. Thank you very much for that. So, Richard, you want to remind everyone once again how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. You can find me at the LAM, which is the Large Association of Movie Blogs. My own site is Kirkham A Movie A Day. If you go to KirkhamAMovieADay.com, you'll find the WordPress version of the site. Or you can go to KirkhamClass.blogspot.com and find the site on Blogger, which includes links to several other projects that I've done. All those links are not on the other site, but they are on the Blogger site. Also, I am on Twitter, believe it or not. I hardly ever use Twitter, but if you want to tweet at me or find a link to something, it's at RichardK007.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. Finding me is also very simple. All you have to do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute, and you can find me. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can just go to our website. So, Richard, do you feel like coming back again tomorrow?
I think I can make it back tomorrow.
All right. Just make sure you got your $5 ready to buy some exotic.
Well, I want those moon rings, you know, the Walter Cronkite moon rings. That's what I'm looking for.
All right. Great. So, until tomorrow, you're
And you are as well.